welcome to this podcast from Adelaide Place Baptist Church. We are a community of disciples, apprentices of Jesus, who live and work in the city of Glasgow, and it's our vision to join God in the renewal of all things. Our discipleship to Jesus is for all of our lives, so as well as listening to this podcast, we'd love for you to join us on a Sunday morning, or get involved in one of our missional communities, which are across the city throughout the week. Our prayer is that you encounter Jesus in some way through this podcast. More information can be found at apbc.net.
Hi everyone, I'm John and I serve as one of the core leaders here in AP. When I consider the climate crisis, I keep coming back to two words, lament and hope. As we've been learning from the past few weeks, looking at Jeremiah and the crisis tradition, lament is a key theme within the Bible. Whenever the people of God have faced uncertainty and disaster, they've always asked these two questions of God: why and how long? In any crisis, we all want to understand this dire situation that we're in and also what's going to happen in the future. Many of us, our hearts are broken by the size and scale of climate change, by the impact that climate chaos is already having on the world's most vulnerable people. Hurricanes in Louisiana, fires in Australia, drought in the Sahel. As a church, we lament over this climate crisis. And we're also starting to learn to repent for when we've been slow to act or resistant to change because it doesn't suit us. Yet there's also hope in asking some of these questions. There's hope of restoration. There's hope of God intervening. There's hope of things being on earth as they are in heaven. There's hope in recognising that people have been called by God into spaces that transform our world systems in order to fix this crisis. There's hope in key scientific developments. Look at the growth in renewables over the past few years and look at some of the innovations in things like small-scale pilots of carbon-neutral concrete. But the pace of change is still too slow for a world that is rapidly racing towards and beyond 1.5 degrees. So we flip-flop between the two. We flip-flop between lament and hope. Our way ahead is a winding path, not a straight road. So as a local expression of the church, we at Adelaide Place have been wrestling with these themes for some time. And this November, when the world's focus is here in Glasgow and on COP26, we want to offer a space for people to explore lament and hope together. So in preparation for that, here's a few suggestions for how we can prepare ourselves. First of all, listen. Read, watch, learn about the impact of climate change. Share what you find with others. We'll put up some material on the website to get you started, but there's lots of really good informative material out there. Secondly, reflect. Consider your own impact on climate. Are there things you could do differently? From small actions like walking instead of taking the car for short journeys, to bigger actions like looking at what your pensions are invested in. Build awareness of your own lifestyle, but also look to see how you can use your own influence in the workplace, in school, college, university, in your community, or indeed in holding our leaders to account. And thirdly, act. Maybe you're already involved in volunteering for COP26. Maybe you've already offered up a space in the Homestay Network. But there's things you can do in volunteering and lobbying and protesting. Find your way, find your voice. And finally, something that you find time and time again when you look at Job, the Psalms, Jeremiah, Lamentations, but also going into the New Testament writings of Paul, Peter, and others, is this deep central conviction that despite everything, somehow God's in charge. Let that be the source of our hope today. Amen.
Amen. As Stephen says, my name is Bea, and yes, I have the pleasure of being a part of this church family, which is an absolute joy. To see my kids dancing on a Sunday morning means this place is home. But on top of that, I work for an organisation called Tear Fund. They are a charity that is passionate about putting an end to extreme poverty. I get to work with youth and the emerging generation. If you count yourselves an emerging generation, go for it. It's pretty much up to the age of 23. I'm still counting myself in that generation. I am far from 23. But basically, I get to hang out with young people and students and mobilize them, enable them, equip them to say, right where you are sat now, you can help your global neighbours that are in poverty. You do not need to necessarily fly across the world as a superhero and save them. But actually, through what we do here, we can help people help themselves out of poverty. We can equip them, give them the tools they need and the opportunities that we are so blessed to have here that they might not have where they live. And you might think, what has climate change got to do with any of that? Well, I'll tell you something. Young people are all over climate change. They absolutely love it. You have seen the school strikes, whether you agree with them or not. They are passionate. They are empowered. And you know what? Yeah, it is an in-fashion thing. People talk about it. People want to wear recyclable clothes. People want to ditch fast fashion. People want to have the latest, whatever the cool keep cup is, or how much it costs because it biodegrades in the ground. It's fashionable, I'm not going to lie. But it's for a reason. And I would love it if we could take a moment this morning to just zoom out from all that particularness of climate change. Maybe which company is doing the best, what government's doing what we can petition. And for the beginning, a moment, I want us to chat about, actually, where's even climate change come from? We know this world is not perfect. It is not how it was originally intended. Look at the beginning of Genesis. It was beautiful. God made it perfect. But brokenness came into this world, broken relationship. And how I see it for us in the church is there is a broken relationship, firstly, with us and God. Secondly, with us and one another. That's why conflict exists. That's why we don't always get on all the time. We are made wonderfully and differently, but that means we also struggle, and there's broken relationship between one another. There's broken relationship between ourselves. We do not look in the mirror and see ourselves always as God sees ourselves. But finally, there's a fourth broken relationship that we don't always observe, which is the broken relationship between us and this world. This world is a bit broken, and personally, I love that young people are willing to take a responsibility for that. And what I'd love to challenge us as a church is, actually, how do we recognize that fourth broken relationship? In the work I do with Tear Fund, last year, we asked some young people, Christian young people across the UK, about climate change, because day in, day out, at conferences, at festivals, they were coming up to us and like, will you pray for me, because I really care about this? My church don't. So we asked churches, we asked young people, what is going on? 9 out of 10 Christian young people said they think climate change is highly important. Not a little bit, not sometimes. They see it as a huge subject of importance. 9 out of 10 young people. 1 out of 10 churches were talking about climate change. So churches say we want young people, we want to engage with them, we want to see the next generation rising. But 9 out of 10 of them aren't talking about the one thing that young people want to talk about. But actually, we don't want to talk about it just because it's fashionable, just because we want to get all the young people in our church and be seen as the cool one that is growing. We want to talk about it because it's biblical. We want to talk about it because it's in the Bible. We are not doing this because it is a good thing. We do it because it is a God thing. We are moved by our faith. There is verses all over the Bible about how we want to love this world.
Genesis 2 is a really simple one, 2:15. The Lord took the man, put him in the garden, and said, "Work it and take care of it." Young people are a great example of that. For sure they are. How do we look at them as trailblazers? How do we humble ourselves and think, actually, maybe they've got this right? Because it is a God thing, because they are moved by their faith. And that is something I get to talk about with them, why we do it, because of our faith, because Jesus loved us first. We can look at this world and see it as broken, but we can also know, as Christians, the hope that is in Jesus Christ, that because of Jesus Christ, it doesn't have to say broken. Because of Jesus, we can have relationship with God, we can have relationship with one another, we can see ourselves as God sees us. But from there, we can go and work with God in the renewal of all things, which includes the renewal and brokenness of this world. Some of you are probably sat there, maybe you're not, but thinking, climate change, great, young people, great, God's called us to do that, great. What has that got to do with poverty, Wyatt Earp, and harping on about it? There is a story for you, someone called Jessie. She lives in Malawi. She and her family do not have enough food to eat, and their house is destroyed. They used to have incredible farmland. They used to sell that to make money, to look after people in their village. People in their villages have died. Two in their family are HIV, and they are starving and need to stay as well as possible in order to deal with their medical needs. The reason they are in that position is because of flooding. The river by their house destroys their house regularly. It destroys their crops, which is why they do not have food. That flooding is not a coincidence. It is not an accident. It's because of the climate change that we are doing here, that others are doing across the world. That is why that flooding exists. So yes, TIRF and respond. We go because of our incredible supporters and build trees along the river so to help it to stop flooding. Yes, we go and give people the equipment and tools they need that they can farm in flooded land and how to do that really, really well so they can help themselves out of poverty. But the main thing we can do is we can stop that happening in the first place by looking after our world better. And one thing that young people are passionate about doing, particularly in the run-up to COP26, so this is where leaders, as many of you will know, are going to gather together and chat about climate change and hopefully make some big decisions to make a change. These are leaders from across the world, and we are blessed enough that that is going to be happening in Glasgow. But during that, young people want to talk to those leaders and say, we would love it if we could agree to not increase the world temperature by 1.5 degrees. Because they find the more tiny increases there are, the more flooding there is, the more climate change there is, the more people are pushed further into poverty. But going back, we do that because of our faith. We do that because we love Jesus. We do that because we're called to love our global neighbours across the world. And I would love to invite you guys to do that. I'm so excited that the church could be such a huge witness at this time. Like, if this is something that's really important, what does it look like to be the church to be leading on that? It's amazing that, in my opinion, young people are leading on that. I would love it if the church were doing that, because we could be such a witness, because we are doing it because we love Jesus. We are doing it because we are called to do that. And during communion, there'll be a little QR code up behind me that you guys can scan or just search later on, whatever search engine you use. We are TIRF and take a stand. But I would love it as a church, as churches across the UK and particularly in Scotland, we could take a stand together and talk to our world leaders and sign this to say we don't want the world's temperature to rise above 1.5 degrees because we love one another. We love this world that is a gift from God, and we want to see it used for Him and His glory. We want to join God in the renewal of all things. So with COP26 being in Glasgow, yes, this is a particularly exciting opportunity. I'm so encouraged and expectant and hope-filled for how God is going to use the church and us at this time. But at the center of it all, the heart behind it all, we do this because we are moved by faith. That is our reason. And our heart is to join God in the renewal of all things, not just some things, but the renewal of all things, which includes this world. Not just because it is a good thing, but because it is a God thing. Because that we as a church family are moved by faith.
It's great to hear different voices as we come around the Lord's table. And I don't know about you, but whenever we come to communion and whenever I think about the cross, probably with the influences I grew up in, I'm mostly predominantly in my mind, it's a God and me, sort of the vertigo, some many put it, relationship as to the fore. And I think it's because I think I grew up with that. It's not that the horizontal, the us and our neighbor and other people wasn't important, but I think the dominant thing for me was as a God and me spirituality. And often, therefore, when we come to communion, it's about us getting ourselves right before God. And we don't often even think about our relationships in the room, let alone our relationships in the world. And when Jesus was asked about his sort of spirituality, what's the greatest command? You will probably have heard these words in Matthew's gospel. Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is, like, love your neighbor as yourself." And that was Jesus summing up the two things that just seamlessly went together in the life of Christ. And he was summing up the law, in effect, in those two commands. And behind them was the Deuteronomy tradition, which captures the first part, the Shema. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments I give to you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children." It was Jesus quoting in Matthew's gospel something from Deuteronomy. And the other part is from Leviticus 19, which kind of just, I think when I read some of this, just shows you the breadth of what was in his mind as a student of the Hebrew scriptures. "Do not defraud or rob your neighbor. Do not hold back the wages of a hired worker overnight. Do not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block in front of the blind. But fear your God, I am the Lord. Do not pervert justice. Do not show partiality to the poor or favoritism to the great. But judge your neighbor fairly. Do not go about spreading slander among your people. Do not do anything that endangers your neighbor's life. I am the Lord. Do not hate a fellow Israelite in your heart. Rebuke your neighbor frankly so you'll not share in their guilt. Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord." And so in the life of Christ, he sums up something that's this vertical and this horizontal, that in him and what he was doing on the cross was bringing those things together. And even in the introduction, when Jesus began or introduced the way of the Lord's Supper with his first disciples, he did it at a really specific time, the time of Passover, which in the Jewish tradition was an incredible recognition of the moment of their great journey, their exodus out of Egypt. And so it was really important for Jesus that he began the Last Supper with his disciples to point to what his death and his resurrection was all about, is a new exodus, a new liberation. And if you remember the Exodus story, we could do just many things, but essentially this was never the story of individuals getting right before God and being taken off to heaven. It was never about that. This is about a people before God and being a light to the nations, a light that contained justice, fairness, mercy, truth, and freedom. It's one people before God who were in relationship covenantally with God and were meant to be a beacon of light to the nations, which in reference to the summation of the law by Jesus contains both that axis of the vertical, us and God, and also the horizontal, us and our neighbor and us and our world. And so one of the questions I think that we just need to keep before us is, and often, is how can we say we love our global neighbors if we don't humble ourselves and weigh up our contribution to climate change? We now know that it is often the case that those who contribute the least to climate change are the most affected by it. And if I'm honest, there's still part of me, it's probably a dangerous line for a preacher, if I'm honest. I should always be honest, but if I'm really honest, there's a bit of spirituality I've experienced when we talk about these things. It can be a bit of a slap on the wrist, do you know? A bit of a naughty thing. We can make a joke about some of these things. It's not actually maybe seen in with any weight. And I think I struggle, and I think others struggle with the idea. Sometimes we think we can understand us and our own guilt before God, but actually systemic injustice and structural sin is harder to get our heads around, but yet very, very core to the spirituality of Jesus and the message of the gospel and the enactment of the Lord's table as we see what the cross has achieved at the Passover, this new liberation that was being done through Jesus. Jesus was doing an expansive work that you've already heard of. And so we remember that as we remember Jesus, as we meet around the Lord's table. But we eat the bread and we drink the wine. And often that line we sometimes say together is, until he comes. And so we come around the Lord's table, there's a sense of anticipation. It's not a place for laying on guilt, laying on shame, and you to go away feeling, oh, I'm an even worse person than I realize. That's not what it's about. It's a place where shame and guilt is dealt with, but it's also a place of anticipation, of the things being put right, that things have fundamentally changed because of the cross of Jesus Christ that we share in around the Lord's table. And so it's a place of hope. It's a declaration of hope when we say, when we eat the bread and drink wine, until he comes, which is pointing to what he will one day do. Reason for hope, and also reason to motivate us in our work, to seek his kingdom now in our lives and in our world.